This is a Pinball News production.
Welcome to the Pinball Inventors Roundtable. I'm Tanya Kleiss, and I'd like to introduce Michael to do it. I think the general idea is we're going to start with just introducing ourselves a little bit each, and then we'll take the tough questions from Michael.
Okay. Although I was looking for your notes and I couldn't find them, so you're going to have to help me out a little bit.
Okay, I'll look them up.
I think this is, with inventors, it's pretty straightforward. They're forthcoming with ideas, and so I'm going to let you guys mainly handle this. But, Tanya, tell us a little bit about what your background is and what innovations you've come up with.
Well, hi, I'm Tanya Kleiss, and my day job is I'm a video game programmer. I make games for the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 and Nintendo Wii. I work at a place called Backbone Entertainment in Emeryville. The first pinball game I really fell in love with was Black Knight when it came out in around 80 or 81. It was at the movie theater when I was a kid, and I'd played that game Evel Knievel, it's kind of slow. With the motorcycles, though, and stuff. But then Black Knight was, intense, and it got... I just came out of seeing Excalibur, the movie, and then playing Black Knight was just, you got to interact with the dude. But then I went to high school, and it turned out to be not... I don't know, I didn't really play video games or pinball much. Then when I got out of college, I got into computer programming and into the video game industry. It wasn't until about 4 or 5 years ago I started playing pinball again. And it was actually Michael's Visible Pinball Machine was one of the things that got me back into it, because I had never even thought about the internals of a pinball machine, prior to something that had a computer in it. I'm so used to writing computer programs and doing everything, all digitally. And then going to the Lucky Juju and seeing the Visible Pinball Machine, and seeing, just realizing, this thing has gameplay, it has rules in it, and it has a progression, and it doesn't have a computer in it. It blew my mind. And then I just, I've been an addict ever since. So I started bugging Michael a lot, coming by, and started asking him, hey, if you guys need any help with if you want to make any projects with computers involved in it. And he was like, computers? I hate the computers. But then Wade called up Michael looking for a programmer, and Mike passed him along to me, and Wade called up and said, "Hey, we're working on this, this project, and it's, with Metallica." And I was like, "Yeah, I'll do it." So immediately I went from zero to 1,000. It was awesome. So I did the sound and the text and some of the light show on the Metallica pin. And then this past year I worked with Wade Krause again with Dirty Donnie doing another pin for James Hetfield, which we talked about in the previous session, the Beatniks pinball machine. So, and besides doing that stuff, I've done, there's a Bimbo the Clown that belongs to Wade, that it's an old, it's a cabinet that has a marionette in it, the clown, and he's supposed to play music. There's an old 8-track player in there that wasn't working, and I replaced that with an MP3 board, and right now I'm actually going back to the helicopter's machine and adding sound to that using some reed switches, which was Michael's suggestion. Anyway, so I'm doing this stuff mostly because I love pinball, and it's kind of cool. It seems like there's momentum gaining it, in the industry. There's more and more people getting excited about it over the last couple of years, and I don't know. I like to contribute what I can to that. So that's me.
Thanks, Jerry.
Hi, I'm Jerry Ellsworth.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So I'm Jerry Ellsworth. My background is my high school dropout. I got into auto racing, built race car chassis for about 5 years and raced them and got tired of that. And then opened a computer store and did that for about 5 years. And the whole market fell out. And then I decided to teach myself chip design, and I started kind of a crash course of working with FPGAs and teaching myself chip design, and then I went out in Silicon Valley and started finding work in chip design Eventually, I did some toys, which were very popular, like the Commodore 64 joystick. That was probably the biggest thing I remember before. It sold like 750,000 units. It was completely hackable, so that made it even cooler, I think. And but for pinball, I got my start when I worked at a bowling alley at about the age of 13. The owner of the bowling alley had an 8-ball deluxe, and him and his buddies would gamble on it, I'm assuming. And they would build up all these credits on it, and you know, in my spare time, they'd say, "Well, go play down the credits on the 8-ball machine." And I'd go in there, and at first, I just thought it was just random flipping the ball around. But watching them and playing the extra credits, I realized there's some real skill to it. And then in their arcade section, they had a Pinbot, which was awesome because I loved everything robots. And so I started playing that and became hooked at that point. And hooked to the point where I went home and grabbed a piece of plywood and started building my own pinball machine, putting screws in and rubber bands, and I used relays for the solenoids to make real kickers that worked. And then I used a calculator to do all of the scorekeeping. The video I actually...
Where is that one? Oh, here we go.
So, I wasn't great at electronics at 13 or 14 whenever I was trying to do this, but so I just would preload the calculator with 1 plus 1, and then I took the switch for equals, and each time you hit equals, it would increment the score. So I just put switches all over the play field so that it would roll over and it would just increment the score. And then I made it a little more complicated where I had physical state machines where I had pieces of tin foil. This is just kind of a reproduction of what I did, but you would roll over things on the shooter lane so that it would... preload the calculator with 1 plus 1, and then you'd have bonuses if you rolled through other places that would be adding other increments to it. And so...
What if you got double bonus?
Hard questions already?
No. I got to interject. You're self-taught on all this.
Yeah, self-taught on everything.
Did you take any electronics courses at all?
No, but I had a lot of mentors. I haven't done this alone, so there were a lot of ham radio operators that took me under their wings, especially when I was a teenager. And then even the chip design, there was people that guided me. So nothing special here, just bypass school. Pinball again later, when I had my computer stores, I had all this space, so I started collecting arcade and pinball machines during this big decline in the 90s, and I just started loading all my computer stores with pinball machines, and that's when I started my Commodore 64 controlled pinball machine, which was based off of a black belt, and I made a controller board for a Commodore 64, unplugged the sound chip, and got the lights blinking, got some solenoids firing, and then lost interest. And then recently I've been doing a lot of pinball hacks for my pinball route and just for fun, like building my own pinball play field, which has been kind of on hold for the last 4 or 5 months. I think we got a video of that. So here it is. The theme is As Seen on TV, and it has some fun things like a television set that's projected from the back where the ball can actually pass through the screen. Yeah. It has some ramps in there that I formed with my laser cutter and just kind of prototyping together. It has a magnetic diverter on the ramp to the right where it's a skill shot where you have to hit the flipper as the ball's rolling down to get it to divert to this other passage to the left. I don't know what else is notable about it. It has an upper play field not seen here.
Is that a scoop in there, Jerry?
Yep.
It's like you need a protector on it. I can do that.
We'll talk afterwards. All right, I don't want to take it all. This is the best part. The Lazy Boy, where the ball comes down if you're skilled with your diverter up there. It lands in the Lazy Boy, and then you can strike it with the ball, and it bounces out. Tanya had a great idea on that. When you knock it out of the chair, since it's like all the junk you buy on television, your ball's watching TV, and it'll be like a guy going, "Oh, God damn it, I gotta go.
Get the groceries. Yeah. Take out the garbage."
Sitting there in the chair.
So Tanya and I are working on a control system, which has been delayed too, but eventually, it'll probably take 10 years to get done. But
it'll be awesome.
Yeah. I've stolen a lot of ideas from people. I I clone things like the Jurassic Park topper. I made my own. Yeah, so the only thing custom about this, I made my own circuit to detect the motor turning so that it was passive to the electronics. I made an LED replacement that doesn't flicker, which is a big deal, I think, because I hate the flicker on LEDs.
There's a circuit?
So there's a circuit. Someone please make it. I made a more refined one that's out on the web somewhere with a single transistor. But no flicker, has the same velocity on and off as a lamp. So it emulates a lamp on to off time, and you can tune it. And I made some really cool effects, too, where you can gang these things up and change the resistors, and you can have, like, afterglow and really cool effects under your inserts. So one will come on really bright, and then you'll have a different color afterglow. All right.
What? What about the tribble?
Oh, the tribble. Yeah, this was cool. I have this out on location in Portland, and I just put it in a bar recently, and the guy's like, that damn thing just goes off all the time and scares me. I actually have it wired into the knocker, but sometimes if there's a power surge, the threshold's on the little...
It scares him? Yeah. It must be Klingon.
Yeah. And also, I made custom little laser doodads for the cannons here, so you use it for targets. Makes it much easier. I used a piece of...
That's Klingon, isn't it?
Yeah. I etched that in there and hand-painted it. If you use a piece of round acrylic, you can make a line that shows up on the playfield. All right, I'm taking too much time.
Well,
good stuff, Jerry. And for the record, you probably need to update that MOSFET diagram, so people like not as smart as you could probably build that LED circuit.
I think it's out there. I think I made a follow-up video.
Somebody asked me about it, and they couldn't find it. But,
oh, really? Okay. I'll do that.
But very clever stuff. Cliff Rainier, a lot of you know me because you call me, hey, Cliffy, you know. So that's how I kind of got my single name, is actually from you guys and people on RGP. I don't even hold a candle to these guys, and especially Jerry, although growing up on a farm in Alaska, 30 miles from town, where you couldn't get anything that was in that town anyway, we just, by nature, all of us kids, we had to be very resourceful, and we had to be able to entertain ourselves and keep our dad from beating us by making sure things worked around the farm all the time. So a lot of things are the mother of invention, and fear is one of them. That's a good driver. You bet, Dad, I can make that, you know, at 10 years old. So I was learning to fix 8-track tape players, you know, when I was like 13, 14, and just fascinated by the machinery and the mechanics of it all. And, you know, I had to apologize to my dad that I didn't follow in his footsteps to be a rancher in Alaska. But I did teach myself a lot of things. Like Jerry, I just taught myself. You know, whatever I needed to do to accomplish a task, I would do everything I could to find out how it worked and just learn it. You just absorb it, you know. And I think as far as inventing goes, and I wouldn't call myself an inventor, really. I'm an absorber, you know, and I absorb what I need to know to be able to accomplish a goal, you know. In the case of pinball, much like Tanyo, it was probably around 1984 for me, and it was Space Shuttle that got me in it. And I was standing in line at a Round Table Pizza, and the pinball was talking behind me, and I was just, and it was a Space Shuttle, and I was amazed. It really attracted me to it. So, I mean, I think we all know the history now. Space Shuttle is what pulled Williams out of a slump, and it may not have been their best game, but it certainly saved their hide, you know, during that time. You know, a lot of the stuff, if you haven't seen my website, up there is, as far as what I do for pinball, because I've only got about 15 minutes here, I make protectors, and that came out of a need, because I couldn't find a play field. Wade wouldn't make me one for my fun house, so there weren't any around, and I had to save the one I had. And so I came up with, if you want to find out, they're alphabetical. There you go. Scoop hole protectors. There you go. And you can see down the lower left corner there. Blow that up. So those are the protectors themselves as they are now. That's the third generation. The first ones I was making didn't look anything like that, but they were stainless steel. So I was a metal guy. My dad's a wood guy, so I rebelled against my dad, and I was a metal guy. So I love metal. I love working with metal because you can add to it, unlike wood. You know, you cut it off, it's gone. With metal, you can always weld it back on and try again. So, like, these will protect the scoops. You know, that round ball going into a square hole does its fair share of damage over time. And there you go. Like, there's the mirror hole. And that's the mirror. If you go in, yeah, it'll blow up or hit to one of the blue or where the eject is. There you go. There you go. And on Funhouse, you know, this is just one I started on because it was my own game. I didn't have any intention of turning this into a massive, you know, expansion of metal pieces that you saw on my table back there today. It was just for me. It was totally invention. In my case, was selfish by nature. But I remember the first Pinagogo I went to, one of the guys saw my game with that on there, and I was kind of embarrassed at first. I thought people were going to make fun of me, and I was just hoping they wouldn't notice. You know, what the hell is that around the hole on your game? And actually, they loved it. They said, hey, mine's got all wear like that, and it covers it up perfectly, and it keeps it from getting worse. And it all started from there. And if you want to go back, Daniel, to the color sleeve page, this one, what the heck was that about? 100 years of pinball, and all we've had is the black bumper post sleeve, right? So I'm putting my Judge Dredd back together that I just restored. And if you've seen Judge Dredd, it's intensely neon colors all over the playfield. And I just simply refuse to put black sleeves back on there. Number one, they degrade and it just makes your game dirty because the rubber is real rubber. And it just sheds. And number two, I wanted some color to go with all that. So there you go. I came, and again, you know, somebody saw him at the show, and they said, hey, I want color on my game like that. That looks good. So there you go. So that in my case, anyway, if that'll help you at all kind of think what makes people think of these things, that's it. You know, it is necessity. It is being a cheap ass like me. And if you just can't buy it somewhere, you got to make it yourself. So there you go. On over to Greg.
Right. Thanks, Cliffy.
Hey, yeah.
Nice product. My name is Greg Ong. I went to high school right in the peak video game era. So the only game I remember from pinball from high school was Space Shuttle as well. It's the only game I remember ever being in the video arcades at that point, 80 to 83 type era. But I make the Mine Orbit Mods lighted shooter rods, like it's on that machine over there, and that's kind of my only product. I have a whole bunch of different varieties of that. I joined the Marine Corps out of high school and went to Navy Electronics School, so I got a really good background in electronics. And I've always been a tinkerer like Cliffy and building and making my own stuff. I used to like to make a lot of Halloween props and things like that that would, you know, scare people or do effects when people walked by. I came up with this idea just out of the blue. I was, you know, like, got to be something more interesting you can do with a shooter rod. And the thing that strikes me nowadays is we're kind of spoiled with, there's so many technologies that you can use at home that you couldn't use before, you know, programmable chips and cool electronic devices right off the shelf, casting compounds, mm-hmm. resins that you can use. So now if you come up with an idea, it's just come up with the idea. There's a way to make it happen, and you can teach yourself. So I'm just kind of a beginner inventor, and I'm teaching myself. I'm using the pickaxe chips, which program more or less in BASIC. And so I've made some prototype shooter rods for Twilight Zone, and all I could get was a white LED, so it had to do something more interesting. So I had to make a little circuit board and program a bunch of different patterns into the circuit board and learn how to do that and learn how to make it remember which pattern it was on. So once you picked your pattern, it would stay there. But I thought, okay, I got to be able to illuminate a shooter rod. And my first idea was to drill a hole all the way through it and put a light pipe. so it would have a light coming from the side and come all the way through, but that just didn't really work. So I was looking at the rod and, you know, all the rods and plungers in a machine are in insulating nylon sleeves. Like, I got to be able to exploit that. So I figured a way to machine the rod a little bit differently so that it's it remains insulated from the machine. And then there's actually a voltage on the rod. So I did that. I trialed them at Pinagogo as well. I made a few of them at Pinagogo just to see what people would think, to see if it was worth trying to make them, and everyone thought they were pretty cool. So so I came out with a few different types, and now I get a lot of requests for custom ones. So that's the next thing you'll probably see in the next year, to make them more custom colors, or people could request custom colors and custom shapes for different machines, and maybe where they would possibly interact with the game if you're in a different mode, that they would use a different pattern or something like that. But I'm just kind of inspired, like if you want to have an idea, you just do some research, look through catalogs and electronics catalogs and tons of stuff online about how to do almost anything. I mean, you can even build your own CNC machine at home pretty cheaply now. So and to take advantage of modern technology, like Cliffy's product, you know, his first product was completely handmade, and I think he gave himself carpal tunnel making the things. And then using modern technology, you know, he found out he could laser cut them from spring steel, so it made it a much labor intensive and a better product, and quicker to make, and it works better. And it's just using technology, looking at what's out there to use, and you can make a better product. So,
good job, Greg.
I have a slide up there of your.
Oh yeah,
that's the custom rod that that Greg did for the Beatniks game.
So I think that's ingenious, running the power through like that.
You have to cast the knob yourself, right?
Right. Yeah.
And you do all this in a home shop?
Yeah. And I had to buy a mini lathe for that, and I buy the blank shooter rods and machine them down. So you have to combine a few different technologies. You have to learn some electronics, and then, you know, I came up with the idea of how to machine it so that it would remain insulated, and then I had to learn how to cast the resin and make silicone molds. But all these things are things that anyone can do at home now that even a decade ago was you couldn't do it at home. You had to be in a manufacturing environment.
Right. Just out of curiosity, then, Tanya, we know you got a day job. I know, Greg, you've got a day job. You do, you're a repair.
Oh, I forgot to say what I did. Yeah.
You're a service technician for...
Yeah, it paid off for me to join the military because I got a really good electronics troubleshooting background. And I got into a blind ad. I ended up working on copiers. I don't recommend that job. But I went to working on color copiers, and then I went to commercial printing equipment, and I repair plate imaging equipment for Kodak. So I use the troubleshooting electronic skills constantly.
He also was foolish enough to offer to be the museum tech for the Civic Museum. And yeah, we really appreciate that. And also, Chris Koontz, who's out in the audience, provides an incredible service of helping us maintain the machines. And your background allows you to do that amazingly well, because you're always servicing these pretty complex photo and Kodak equipment. But Jerry and Cliffy, what, do you guys quit your day job?
No, I'm... If there's anybody out here who's not local, I work for the local utility company. Don't hold San Bruno against me. I work for PG&E. This 32 years, and I still work it. But I probably spend more hours after working on weekends making protectors and other pinball innovations. I've changed my name, actually, the company name. I went legit, you know, a couple years after this got taken off, and I realized, oh my God, this isn't just a hobby business. I got to get legit.
And you don't hire anybody else?
I don't like anybody else. How to trust them. Ron, you know, Greg, they're welcome to come over and help me anytime. And they do frequently, and thank you very much. But,
Jerry, what about you?
I do contract chip design. Although I have a pinball route now, my addiction to pinball grew to the point where they were just overflowing. There wasn't a room in my house that didn't have a pinball machine in it. If I could have put one in the bathroom, I would have. And so now I have about 50 pinball machines around Portland, and it's taking off really well. I imagine if I double my route, I probably won't be doing chip design next year.
Really?
Yeah, it's really, really, really well.
Wow, that's great.
It's exciting because I, you know, go in that 5-year cycle, race cars, computer stores, and it's been like 8 years. It's time to do something else.
Question about chip design. How did you sell yourself to Silicon Valley? How did that happen?
It was extremely difficult because I had no experience and no degrees. So I built prototypes. So I had these boards that generated video and different things, and I would go to trade shows and I would shake everyone's hands and find out who has the most power in each of the booths. Like, is there anyone at the top in here? And then I would befriend them and, like, get a chance to, like, hey, look what I can do. Mm-hmm. And then I'd get interviews, and I would come down from Portland and then get rejected over and over again by the HR department. And then I just went through that cycle and just had faith that it was going to happen, and eventually someone believed in me enough and gave me a job, and I did a good job, and then they referred me, and now a lot of my work comes as referrals, and, you know, people can just look online and see all the products I've developed, and it's not too much problem now, although it's boring work. I'd rather work on pinball machines. It gives you everything.
If I could ask, I got to say something about that along those lines. Is I don't know, do you find, like me, that The fun in it is in the newness of it. So you don't like these protectors. You know, I was absolutely thrilled to come up with a perfect design that worked on this particular problem area. And then I was happy to move on to something else, but I sure didn't want to make 100 of those, you know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're ready for the next challenge. Okay, you conquered that.
Exactly. Like, for me, chip design, it's just the same. They just pushing buttons and pulling chains every day. It's the same thing. There's no thrill left in it. So
conquered it.
Yep. I don't know how long it will take for pinball. Probably a long time for me. But.
Jerry? The game you're working on, is it finished? Is it a one-shot game?
Well, unless someone steps up and says, yeah, we want to manufacture a million of them. I'd love to produce a pinball machine someday. How about you?
Nah.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. We should do, like, at least two of them.
Well, yeah, that's more than the as seen on TV. That was kind of something I started to develop some electronics on, and it kind of grew more and more. We were working on a head-to-head, which turned out pretty fun, considering how primitive it was.
Yeah. Let's see, where is that thing?
We had our first annual pin hack. It was over the Christmas break where a bunch of us got together and we worked on building a pinball machine, see what we could do in 1 week.
Wow.
I think there's even a photo in here of one of our friends that came over. He fell asleep during the process of it. He was in a chair like...
Yeah. That's my band of hands. I'm sort of doing the hand modeling. Let's see if there's a... Do we have a picture?
Well, there's some insert technology we're playing with.
Well, first we have to see the guy sleeping in the corner.
Yeah.
Whole pinballs never die. They just end up in Jerry's projects.
Yeah, I know. There's my old shop. I moved to a new shop, which is bigger, and I thought, all right, I'll have space. I can set up the custom pin. And
I don't have any good shots of the whole thing. Yeah. But it's really cool. Yeah. We got to the point where it's basically we took plywood that was the length of two pieces that were the length of a play field and put them together with a hinge, and then basically copied the layout of was it Flash or
Challenger?
We picked a Williams machine. It was either Flash or Taxi or something like that that Jerry had a play field. So just the slingshot positions, the flipper positions, the outlane positions. And then took two of those, put them together with a hinge, and and then just started shooting the ball back and forth just to see if it would work and if it was fun, and it was. We kind of ran out of time, didn't get to, but I started building some ramps using cardboard and masking tape in the middle. It's kind of cool. I don't know if they still exist anymore, but you could actually get like the ball to go up in the air and come back down again.
It was pretty cool, the air balls on it. And having them like fly towards you with no glass.
Yeah, it's so. I mean, I definitely want to finish that one. But you know, it's just a matter of getting the time together to do it. So, just next vacation, gonna work on that some more. We also had an idea of having like an upper playfield area that you shoot it up so it jumps up there, and then there's sort of like a Twilight Zone magnet area where you have two sets of magnets and you're sort of boxing each other. You're throwing the ball back and forth at each other, and whichever side it goes off is the person they lose. So it's kind of a, and we had a lot of ideas. They're still in development, but it was a lot of fun.
It turns out it's very difficult to come up with game rules for a head-to-head pinball machine. Like, how do you score head-to-head and what targets score? Because you want something on the playfield that scores. If you keep all the targets on your side scoring to your side, well, someone can just sit there and hog the ball. So some of our thoughts was, the scoring should be opposite, so you need to hit targets on their side, too.
Like on Joust.
Yeah.
And you could take away their points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By hitting their target.
And so it seemed that the themes we've come up with so far were basically sports-type things like tennis, ping-pong, and then we're envisioning like a light array so you could do different things, like set a bowling alley on your side so you, when you hit it, it's lit up like pins on a bowling alley, and then it goes to their side. You knock down the pin, lock out the lights, and then it goes to the other side, and then they do their side. And then you could have a golf game where you're trying to hit specific targets. Anyway, it's still in development. Hopefully no one will... Well, no, steal our secrets. That's cool. Do it. But it's... I don't know. Like, it... I mean, it's pretty... It's huge. I mean, it's the length of two pinball machines. So I'd like to... We'd like to get it done and then put it in the museum and just see what happens.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, but I can't give you a deadline. You know, I can't give you the timeline because... Unless you, you know,
give can I
the,
give you a deadline?
I'm the slacker. Yeah. I'm the reason it's not moving forward. I haven't developed the board yet. So
it's coming along, actually.
But. Well, that leads me to a question, because I always thought competition pinball, where it's two or more people playing against each other, would be something that might bring pinball to the forefront again. But what do you guys see as, this is a question for each one of you, as an innovation that could, you know, bring pinball back into the forefront?
Can I go first?
Yeah.
So, well, one of the things that's happening, like the rig that Randy Elwin has set up out in the tournaments, mm-hmm. and also Dave set up at the Papa tournaments, they had it at Cal Extreme also, of just a camera rig sitting over, looking down at the play field, and then just a TV flipped over so you can see, people can actually watch. I think that changes the game of, like, tournaments become interesting to watch. Instead of just watching someone from behind and the weird dance moves they make or whatever,
yeah.
you get to see what they do in some cases.
Yeah.
But everybody's got their, you know, it is kind of interesting to watch the body movement style, but it's even cooler to what, you know, be able to see the overhead shot.
The shots they're making, yeah.
And then I think all we need to do is add, like, a moderator who knows what they're talking about. And you know, then you have like a televisable pinball thing that people like. I watched the How to Play Pinball or How the Pros Play Pinball yesterday, and it was pretty interesting to watch, like, you know, demonstration of drop catches and all that stuff live. It was, I don't know, I find it pretty compelling, and I've also found, like, hanging out with the pinball stars, like Hal, for instance. I had to spend a lot of time with him, and he was just, you know, like, describing the machines to me, and like what the compelling shots were, where the big money shots are, and it just turned the game around for me. Like, instead of being this even like the more complex machines, I usually walk up to them and I don't know what I'm doing, and then having someone come, an expert at it, come and describe, like, well, this is what you want to focus on here, or the sequence is you do this and then this lights up and that's the big money shot or the jackpot. I didn't even know that on these multi-ball games, that during multi-ball, there's a lot of points if you hit a ramp, like, for the jackpot. I just didn't know that, like, 2 years ago. But it turns out, like, because I'm focused down, like, here, like, oh my God, the balls are everywhere. But, you know, anyway. But I think, but...
Televised Timo. Jerry?
This is something I started developing about a year ago. I wanted to put an LCD screen down where the scorecards are and have how to play the game. Mm-hmm. And since then, I prototyped it on Black Knight, and I couldn't get the glass and everything in there, and it just didn't look very good. It's still possible, I think. But I had an idea, and I think I will prototype this, and now that I have the route, I'm going to experiment with this. I'm going to make a topper that has a screen in it that has Pinball 101 selected clips playing from it, like how to flip the ball. And it's going to say, learn to play pinball for free. And then I'm going to put it right next to all my pay machines and put a pinball machine on free for a week or two on a location to do that kind of outreach. So someone that wouldn't normally play pinball can do it with no risk.
Wow.
And we'll have someone, an expert, showing them.
You don't think those instruction cards give you enough?
So appealing.
They'll cut it for you, huh? That's pretty good.
You could probably cut out the LCD screen and just get a Terminator 3.
Shoot, yeah, and yeah.
I like T3, come on.
Yeah, me too. I love Arnold.
Cliffy,
You know, along the same lines, I think what's gonna re-energize our uninitiated and as yet unfound pinball players is going to be technology related, because that's where all the younger crowd is anyway. They're sitting in their living room on no offense, Xboxes and PS3s. I know. What are you gonna? Don't want to take money out of your pocket there, Tanya, but that's where they're going because it's convenient and the technology brings them in. It's becoming more and more realistic. I mean, God, how many of us played Atari 2600 and we're dreaming of a real three-dimensional, you know, walkthrough? And there's a guy in Germany, I don't know how many of you have seen it, a few years ago that made this pinball machine up at eye level. You see that?
Oh,
and then you
yeah.
go in at a pod, and it's a real pinball. I think it was a getaway. I'm not sure. I can't.
No, it was Terminator. It's called like the Pinnator or something.
Yeah,
Terminator
something like that. I couldn't remember. Yeah. But I thought it was. I thought, if not for the expense, this was very attractive to people. You're up there competing at eyeball level with that ball. You know,
instead of looking down. At
right. Instead of standing over it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you're
your
in the
actually,
game.
Yeah, your head actually goes in it.
Yeah, it actually. It's
right
on
here.
Lift, so and it adjusts to your height, mm-hmm. and then it becomes the whole headgear is a pinball machine, and you're looking at that ball. But I thought if you combined that with a head-to-head aspect, which is I think where you're headed with this question, to bring, you know, because people want to do things together, you know. As much as we all love wedge heads, they kind of suck for multiplayers, you know, to get along. So I don't know. Maybe that's where it needs to go. You know?
That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure what it is myself. What will bring pinball back into popularity in the public? But I see a lot of interest in customized pinball machines, and almost every enthusiast has their own idea for a custom game, the theme they came up with. Or a move they wanted to do. But the stumbling block for everyone, the biggest one, is the electronics. So the kind of stuff that you guys are thinking about working on, and the P-Rock board, things like that. If there was a generic board, you know, using today's computer power, that you could build a basic pinball machine off of, it had all the drivers, and you had the basic rules of the pinball, you know, there's flippers and slingshots and bumpers and whatever, and then you could plug it into like a programming interface and make your rule set on the computer and then USB download your rules to the board. I think there'd be a lot of interest in the people that are in the hobby to be able to make their own pinball machine and make their own rules, but that's beyond most people to design a board. So I think there's a few people that are kind of simultaneously working on projects along those lines. But to bring it down to where it's simple enough for, you know, someone who's a handy enthusiast that could maybe have a kit and make their own custom pinball machine.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty interesting. And, you know, just touching on real quick on what Tanya was saying about video and exposure to ESPN. In hockey, they used to use this thing on the puck where it would glow and you could follow. And somebody suggested that for pinball. to put a little globe tracer on the ball so that, because it's flying around and your average person can't see it, but that would tie into getting it out to more people that don't even play but could observe it and keep that social aspect of what pinball makes pinball different from video, the fact that everybody can watch you screw up or do good, you know. That's interesting. Who is developing boards? I know you were developing the system, and then I saw somewhere that somebody else was developing a system. And
well, Ben Heckendorn made his own system for the Bill Paxton. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
And then are you continuing to work on a control system?
Yeah, I've been saturated, so it's been just like my playfield.
Just
buried.
Out of curiosity, what's it capable of doing? Like how many solenoids and lights?
So as I've it configured, it has 24 channels, and I made all the channels the same so they could either drive row column strobes for lamps or solenoids directly. And so our thought was something, a beginner system that would be very simple. So just you have screw lugs or something on it, and you don't worry about which channel you hook it to. They all drive the same, and they all sync.
You also don't worry about it burning out.
Yes, I have current detection.
Wait, any cost estimate on something like that?
Well, we talked about that.
$1 million, I think.
Anyone got to write a check?
The first one. Yeah, you want the first
one. That first one's always expensive.
Well, the thought was, I mean, there's some ways we can cheapen it, make it less expensive. I forgot. When you design, you never want to say cheap. But one way is just don't populate as much many components on there. Let people solder their own components down if they're capable of doing that. And then have different CPU options. Have a little simple CPU like the one that you're using that could work with a basic operating system instead of having to program in C or assembly. And then have options for boards to plug on there for fancy Linux operating systems.
Can I ask one more question? What do each of you, besides flippers, say? What's your favorite innovation in pinball that's been developed over the years? And it can go all the way from pre-flipper. Don't want to do flippers because that's pretty obvious.
Speech.
Is there anything that sticks
Speech.
Out?
What about the ball?
Speech.
The ball.
Gravity was pretty
good. That rock thing sucked, huh?
The cube didn't work for me.
Ball save, I think, got a lot more people into pinball in the 90s. You know, firepower is hard, and, true. You know, if I would have put my quarter in that the first time, I don't know.
Ball save. Anybody else?
Ramps, too.
Ramps.
Can I ask you a question to the group? How do you filter ideas? Because you all sound like thinkers and just have ideas flowing all the time. How do you choose the one to put your time into? Like for Cliffy, it was the Funhouse. But what are some other examples of how you chose one idea to run with when you have this sketchbook going on in your mind? Obviously, all of you.
I don't.
Yeah, I was.
That's why I have 20 unfinished projects.
Testify. My wife and daughter are here, and they can vouch for it. It's very difficult to even get to sleep. My mind is going all the time.
Do you start a lot of stuff and not finish it?
Honey?
He says I'll finish it.
Yeah.
It's never done.
I've got a...
Yeah. Start
with our
laundry.
Isn't there something you need to do outside? I can't filter it. It's just what priorities, I think, is what you're getting at. Usually it's driven externally. Whatever people want the most of, or they have the most need for, if there's something that's obvious for that, then or what's convenient at the time. If I have a material or the capability or a tool that I know, and I don't have to teach myself at that time, you know, so it comes down to sometimes convenience, you know.
Yeah. Right, yeah, practicality is a big part of it, and if you want to sell something, then there's only so many things you can do at a reasonable cost that, you know, like when I came with the shooter rods, a lot of people have all these ideas for me, like, why can't you make a custom one that does this and that, and is, you know, it's because you'll be the only one that buys one from me, right? So you get a lot of good ideas, but then you filter a lot of them down to what's practical. And you might do something elaborate for yourself, but then if someone, you know, there's some things that are just, it's cool, but no one would be willing to pay that much for it, you know, with a few exceptions. So that's one of the things I go back to with using technology and looking what's out there and not reinventing the wheel. And, you know, sometimes you could design a circuit, but you might find a chip that does already what you need for 59 cents. And why build a whole circuit? So the research helps a lot to find ways to do things, yeah.
Well, on the other hand, though, I mean, and I'm not taking away from what drives your priorities, but I've had people like what was his name? I got somebody right now that's desperate for a Stern 9-ball spinner bracket. And I don't know if anybody knows what that looks like, but it kind of hangs out in space. It's really wide. It's very intricate in its bends and whatnot. And, yeah, it's like you were saying about use of modern, more cheaper technologies. It's almost more cost-effective to just go ahead and do a prototype now and get it out there and get the interest, then wait for that interest to accumulate. Then, you know, I can save this guy's game on the one hand, and he'll spread the word, and if it's something that everybody needs, oh, yeah, I need that too, then we can do it. But there is a breaking point. You do have to do some number crunch to say, okay, well, it's going to cost me $300 to make one or 30, you know, and I don't even own a Stern 9-ball. So again, it comes down to kind of selfish convenience, you know. But I don't know. I'm sure the rest are like that. We want to show people that we can do it. It's almost like they're putting a challenge over. Yeah, you can't do that, can you? I mean, they're not saying it that way, but that's kind of how we look at it. Like, I can make that, you know.
I have two problems in finishing projects. One problem is I get to 95%, and it's like, I've achieved everything I wanted to achieve. I can see the finish line. It's like, I don't need to finish it the rest of the way because I know it's just, you know, doing the
last... You
don't
need to do the paint job on it. Now, right?
Yeah, that kind of thing. And I forgot the second one.
Yeah, Randy.
It sounds like with the technology we have, could you make a pinball kit that you can sell for the home audience that you guys allude to? And from my viewpoint, what's difficult for the hobbyist would be, say, the artwork or getting a board that, you know, an actual play field fabricated, but if you had generic brackets and inserts, electronics, things like that, do you think that's conceivable and cost effective? Because it's still a time period, but it sounds great, but it'll cost $5,000 to make a $2,000 game.
I think I've put some, we've probably all put some thought into how to do a do-it-yourself kit. I think, it's a lot of work to make a pinball machine, from what I hear, and takes a lot of different skills and things. So I think, I don't know, I could see, like, you know, if we could raise a couple $1 million, we could put a kit together, and then hopefully, you know, enough people would buy it, but it'd be hard to make the money back. But I think building the parts, like the computer board we're talking about, and we've talked some about, Jerry has a lot of people have ideas about how to make the electronics a lot easier, like using less wiring by using serial data connections for the light targeting. So one thing, to make the wiring a lot simpler. I've heard different ideas. Like one idea was make the playfield a big hex, this kind of hex grid, and then you'd have these components. There were pop bumpers on a hex and a metal guide that was on a hex, and you would put them in and rotate them and try them out in different places. I've heard versions, other ways of doing that, either some way to mount the pop bumper on top and have it secured, but maybe use a pegboard for placement.
Yeah, we're working with the Exploratorium. They want to make little kits for kids to, like, put together components, and so we were discussing the pegboard thing where you can plug it in anyway and it wouldn't short out or burn, and just all your connections are there, so you can just kind of put them wherever you want, and some won't make sense and some will, and let kids experiment.
I met a woman in Vienna that she's a teacher, and she had come up with a scheme to make a simple pinball machine, just a tiny one like this. But it had the flippers and the bottom of the machine in a way that you can flick the ball out into it. And then she had super cheap things that you can put out there that do things, like an LED that if the ball touches it, it lights up. And then she just lets her art students make pinball machines, and she doesn't give them any guidance at all. Lets them discover ball traps. So if they place whatever their pop bumper component in their wrong place, the ball gets stuck. And she says that that's totally okay, and actually some people make some really fun gameplay by making things that you wouldn't consider ever putting in a real pinball machine. Hmm. So there is efforts out there to do small-scale custom ones.
Yeah, how are we on time?
You're out of time.
Are we?
No.
It's just...
less than an hour before.
We got time for one more question?
I think I'm on turn up the light. It's
okay.
Kind of slow.
Just so we can see the panelists before letting them know.
Are we truly out of time? Yeah. Oh, no, we are. Okay. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering, from your point of view, being a community, for them, I mean, they're talking about things, ideas that were necessary. What about my cheese? What do you want them to invent?
What would I like to see? I'm very interested in the competitive aspect of it, where you have more than one player at a time. I think if you can engage two to four people, that is something that would really refresh the whole concept of pinball. I was fascinated when Shane Pickerel showed up with his fantasy pinball machine. I don't know if everybody saw that, but it was a 4x8. Sheet of pinball. God, it was just chock full of everything pinball. And he had it hanging up this way, but obviously it was meant to be played on a slant. And it was a four-player machine where you had either four separate players or two teams. And they would compete on this giant pinball table. And they had to do, each team had to do all these different things, and to load a ball up into here, and then that ball would get go into play and allow you to go over to this part. And you had to store up so many extra balls or load so many balls before you could do this and that. And it all ended up in the center was a giant arena where both teams would then compete head-to-head in this arena. It was fascinating to me. I saw that, and I thought, wow, that could be the future of pinball. He was so detailed in how he had done all his CAD drawings. It was all modeled on reality. And then he did a photo concept, a photorealistic concept of it. I thought that was pretty incredible. I like to see things that are not commercially feasible, but technologically feasible. That, I think, is what I'd love to see these guys do, because they come up with some pretty amazing stuff. And the reason the pinball companies didn't do it was because it wasn't cost effective. Well, we don't have that problem because we're careless with it. And we can do whatever we want. So you could experiment and do some things that never had been dreamed about. That's what I'd like to see. Make the ball do things that...
Is there an R&D division of Pacific Pinball?
Yeah, there is. It's
everybody up there.
That's kind of it right there. Yeah.
No, there's more.
Tanya and Jared collaboration on this two game hinge together idea.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Head-to-head competition. It doesn't have to be feasible. It just has to be one of them with some sort of containment unit so you don't do any damage to each other.
Well, our games, current machines have gameplay for up to four players. I think the novice doesn't even know. I see a lot of people come up and hit four games into a machine and not even realize they're playing a four-player game.
So. Yep, right across from my table. Yeah.
And I see them at the end add all the scores up to get their score.
You're not supposed to do that?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yes.
Would you go to play over time before it becomes not pinball? For example, if you had a video of Playfield, would it still be fun for us to do pinball?
Ooh.
As long as there's a ball in it. Something's physically happening, it's still pinball, just like when we transitioned from EMs to solid state to DMD to mode based and all these toys and things like that. As long as it's still a physical game that's happening in there, the LCD or screen or whatever it is, it's just more enhancement to the game, and you have to move forward. And that's what happened with Williams. You know, they tried to make it in 2000, and that was a great idea, but they killed it. But that was, they were trying to do the same thing, go to the next step, because you can't just have a stagnant product.
Yeah, my,
it loses interest.
There was a woman here, Terry, and she worked at Williams, and she was on the Pinball 2000, well, she was on the Save Pinball project right alongside with George Gomez, and I talked to her. She was developing the whole video pinball thing that you're talking about, and of course George Gomez just flew, you know, into, that's not pinball, you know, that's a video game. And I mean, you see what they've done with Ultra Pin and everything, and you know, I gotta say, it's not really pinball. It's, for some reason, it's once you do that, it's you're getting locked into a programmer's world instead of the world of reality.
The ball isn't wild.
I have a funny story about that.
Get back in your cage.
So not too long ago, a month or two ago, I was servicing a machine at a place where kids could come and play also. And there, I often just give a credit to the kids that are there to get them out of my hair. And this kid's mother was there. And she's like, "Wow, you're really good at this." And the kid said, "I play it on the computer."
Oh, my goodness.
So it's not a bad thing to have.
Yeah,
because yeah, this kid was doing pretty good for, had never touched a pinball in real life before.
I'll have to also, I want to also say that besides the visible pinball getting me back to pinball, also the Williams Hall of Fame collection for the PlayStation Portable, I got to, actually it was the Gottlieb collection. It has, it's a virtual pinball implementation that has Black Hole and has Eldorado and Hot, Big Shot, and a bunch of Gottlieb games. Starting, well, actually, the earliest one
Baffleball
is a Playboy is on there.
Baffleball.
Yeah. I was on the Microsoft test team for that when it came
really?
Out. Yeah.
This is a different one made by another. It was just a couple of years ago. They have it on the Wii and the Xbox 360. And they actually did a really good job. Like, I feel it's better than the visual pinball, and it actually, it's not the same as playing a real pinball machine, but it's. It got my juices flowing. I was able to hide out with my PlayStation Portable, hiding from my little nephews who wanted to punch me a lot. And it gave me solace, and it brought me into pinball.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I would like to see a pinball table that is all video, but then also pinball, like the physical stuff, and like something that tracks the ball and has like particle effects following the ball around. You could do some pretty, either with a projector or, I don't know how you do it exactly, but like applying real-time graphics along with the physical objects and things, like more than...
Like a touch screen with, you know...
Yeah.
Touch screen built into it.
Yeah, and then you could have, like, just enormous explosions happening when you hit things.
Yeah.
I think it really
that's
is...
That's a great idea.
Anyone have an iPad? They don't want it. But it's a little frame.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
You're going to kick us out.
Okay.
Wow. Thanks a lot, you guys, for participating.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.